And colleagues, let's go through the order of the agenda, at least that's planned for now anyway. We were hoping to do SCR 9 first, and Representative Winters is not here, or Senator Winters is not here at the time, so we'll fit her in as she comes into the hearing room. Then we'll follow up with Senate Bill 938. And then to House Bill 2523, Senate Bill 946 upon Senator Westland's appearance. Then we'll go down to Senate Bill 332, House Bill 2502 after that, then Senate Bill 915. And Senate Bill 763, and we have another revision that we will be adding, Senate Bill 538. And all these being work sessions, basically we're going to be looking to have testimony just to come in and introduce bills or amendments and be able to move from there. So I think as we just put that, we had right. Yeah, but he's not here now, so we'll okay. So as we're just trying to look who's here and get things scheduled, we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 938. Oh, sorry. Check that. Close the session. Sorry. We're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2523. And colleagues, this, if you can, it's actually no one here to introduce this bill. This is, oh, wait a minute. Bill Linden?
He was outside. I do have some witness testimony.
Okay.
I have some witness testimony. If we want to pass that out.
Okay. Sandy can pass out written testimony, enter for the record, written statement dated March 26, 2003 from the Deschutes County Board of Commissioners.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2523 comes before you. What you have in front of you is an SMS that allows the Justice of the Peace in the district in Deschutes County to include all or part of the city of Bend, declares an emergency, and is effective upon passage. And Mr. Linden is around.
Thank you. Mr. Linden, can you kind of explain the issue that hung this up in Ways and Means and how that's been rectified, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For your record, Bill Linden, representing Deschutes County. House Bill 2523 was filed at the request of the County Commission and was originally assigned to the House Judiciary Committee, where it passed down on a 9-0 vote. After that, there was a fiscal impact file that showed a significant revenue impact in the $200,000 to $400,000 range that was submitted by the Judicial Department, and dealt with a concern they had about cases that otherwise would be filed in the state circuit court going into the justice court. The county does not agree with the methodology used in calculating that revenue estimate. We actually believe, because of the higher collection rates that the justice court experiences in that county, that the state general fund is going to be held harmless, or perhaps even benefit from the unitary assessment amounts that will be collected through the justice court. But what I'm authorized on behalf of the county to commit to is that if the circuit court in Deschutes County is able to identify an actual revenue drop that results from the justice court operating within the city limits, that through intergovernmental agreement, the county is willing to reimburse the general fund through the judicial department for whatever that amount may be. Again, we don't think there's going to be any revenue drop whatsoever, and the bill is not designed to provide a revenue windfall for the county in any means. What it's designed to do is provide a judicial forum for minor traffic cases, some small claims cases, and matters that typically fall to the bottom of the circuit court calendar in terms of priority. And that's why the circuit court in Deschutes County does not oppose this measure. They had one condition on their neutrality, which was that the court not be located in the courthouse. It will not be located in the courthouse. There's alternative sites within the city limits that have been identified where the court would actually be located. So with the commitment that if in fact a revenue impact is shown to occur after the operation of this court begins, the county is fully prepared to make the general fund whole through an intergovernmental agreement and payment through the judicial department. And that is what held it up in Ways and Means, and then subsequently it was released from Ways and Means for assignment to this committee.
Any questions?
Yes.
Representative Moss Anderson.
Thank you. Having just being given this, I want to understand that you're saying that the county commissioners were in favor of this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moss Anderson, yes. The county commissioners were the ones who filed this bill, sponsored this bill. And they very much favor creation of the court because it's a matter of convenience, really, for the citizens of Bend, who will get their minor traffic and small claims matters handled in a much more expeditious manner in the justice court than if they're lined up in circuit court with all of the very important criminal and civil cases that come before that forum.
And that and what does the Oregon Judicial Department say about this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mona Sanderson, the circuit court in Deschutes County does not oppose this measure. The Judicial Department in the House Judiciary Committee testified in opposition to it.
For what reason? Follow-up?
They were concerned about the revenue impact, and I'm not going to speculate on what other concerns they might have.
Further questions? Okay. Can you draft something that we can have for the floor statement, just to put that in as part of the record on the floor statement, just about explaining that part of the bill and the guarantee, I guess, on the revenue issue?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, great. Thank you. No further questions. Thank you. Mr. Flores.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2523 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Flores moves House Bill 2523 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Representative
Moss Anderson.
Thank you. I will be a no only because only until after I get some information, more information from the opponents of the bill, and since it's obvious that we're not having them talk to us, I'm not comfortable in voting yes until I get the information that I feel is needed in a democratic process. Thank you.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would like to indicate my support for this bill in that it is a local entity finding local solutions to local problems, and I think that's a very good thing.
Okay. Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Barnhart.
Excused.
Both aye.
Representative Gordon.
Aye.
Representative
No.
Representative Bergen.
Chair Doyle.
Chair votes aye, and I'll carry the bill on the floor. House Bill 2523 moves the floor with a due pass recommendation. Closes the work session on House Bill 2523, and we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 946. Senator Wilson, you could please take a few minutes to explain this bill.
For the record, Senator Ben Westland, District 27. I believe that's the first time I've ever said that. That's somewhat. Thank you, Mr. Chair, very sincerely, for giving me the opportunity to testify on this bill and for your hearing it. Senate Bill 946 is one of those incidences that really indicates just how important public input from all of our constituents truly are. And it highlights an inconsistency in a very good law that we passed in the 99 session, which has become known as the graduated driver's license. It is one of those interesting inconsistencies that, while we passed the bill with all the best intentions, and it has succeeded in its stated purpose, and that's probably the most important thing, it has saved young lives. What we did is not address the discrepancy between learner's permit periods, 15 to 16, and when students actually receive their driver's license. What we currently do under current law is during the learner's permit period, we allow student drivers with, obviously, their parent in attendance, they couldn't be driving otherwise, to carry passengers. When they turn 16, they automatically lose that ability, even with parental presence and permission, to carry those very same passengers. This was brought to my attention by Christy and Kyla Otini of Lapine, Oregon. Kyla is the young daughter, and she was driving quite legally with a learner's permit with her mother in the car and was doing just fine. Then turned 16, was proud to get her driver's license, and was promptly stopped by perhaps the only individual, or at least county deputy sheriff in the state that actually knew the law, and cited for doing with a driver's license what she was legally permitted to do with a learner's permit. She was carrying passengers with her parent in the car. We introduced this bill on behalf of Christine and Kyla to add some consistency to the law with an emphasis that the parent should be allowed to make the decision as to whether the student, or in this case the fully licensed driver, should be able to carry passengers or not.
Any questions? All right. Thank you for testimony.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much.
Sure. All right. First up for us.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 946 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Flores moves Senate Bill 946 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Excuse.
Full time.
Aye.
Aye.
Excused.
Chair Doyle.
Chair votes aye. Have a carrier for this bill. Representative Flores. Representative Flores, be the carrier. Senate Bill 946 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Close the work session on Senate Bill 946, and we will open up a work session on Senate Bill 938. And John Pell, 938, can you come explain the bill, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing AT&T Wireless. With me is Kevin Martin, a consultant for AT&T Wireless and a land use planning expert. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you earlier in the session passed without a dissenting vote House Bill 2785, which dealt with this same subject that came out of Representative Close's business committee. The bill on the Senate side needed some revisions, and several of the parties involved approached us with concerns, and we've tried to address those concerns in Senate Bill 938. This is a bill that allows modification and co-location of cell tower equipment when it's necessary for the changing of equipment or the co-location with another carrier. I don't think there's opposition by anywhere in the state of Oregon to co-location because it means fewer of these towers. What our bill does, beyond defining the terms of co-location and modification, it allows minor increases in the height and footprint of a cell tower when it's necessary to do so. The height increase is limited to 15 feet, and the enlargement of the imprint is limited to 500 square feet. This bill does not allow these people to get out of regulation. It sets the regulation that governs the site to that was in effect the time the tower was sited. So those rules still apply. This bill allows for modification when it's necessary to co-locate additional equipment on the tower or to change antennas for technology purposes. So we recommend this bill to the committee. It came out of the Senate Rules Committee unanimously, so it had bipartisan support, and we'd recommend it to you.
Any questions? Call the roll, please.
Do I need
to? Oh, sorry. I guess we do need to move it.
Okay. Well, in that case, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 938 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Flores, move Senate Bill 938 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Barnhart.
Sorry, I just came in. I don't know what we're voting on.
All right. Senate Bill 938, as is.
Oh, that might be easier.
Mr. Chair, is this the second bill that you've heard?
This is the third one.
Third one?
Yes.
And this is as is?
Correct.
Without amendments?
Correct.
Okay.
All right. Call the roll, please.
Aye.
No.
Both sides.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. And Carrier, Representative Close?
Yes.
All right. Representative Close will carry this to the floor with the due pass recommendation. So we'll send 938 and close the work session. Yeah. Remember our order. Looks like it's Senate Bill 332. Open up a work session on Senate Bill 332. And Bill Perry, come forward and explain 332.
No, he didn't do this. Perry,
have an amendment to 332?
Yes, Chair Doyle, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Perry. I'm with the Oregon Restaurant Association. And as most of you know, we passed out of the House Bill 2624, which was a straight repeal of the indexing portion of the minimum wage measure that passed. Excuse me. Since that time, just for your information, there were three states that have this type of an indexing. Alaska, which their legislature actually repealed the indexing. Washington also has an indexing, and they passed out of their Senate of this type of legislation. Obviously, statutes are different, so they're not exactly the same, but same type of legislation. And so, as we saw that model, I think it changes it slightly. And from the change, what what it does is it keeps the indexing in place. But what the amendment does is it defines full employment. And so what would happen is in at the time when the BOLI under the current indexing, Bureau of Labor and Industries, will calculate what the CPI is for the state from August to August, at the same time they would calculate what is full employment. And for that period, they will look at the national average of the unemployment rate, which is at this point 6.3, and they will do that on a monthly basis. Then they will look at the state's unemployment, which in Oregon, basically since the beginning of session, has gone from 7.0 all the way as high as 8.4, and now I think we'll believe it 8.1. So it'll take those running averages, and if we for a state are at full employment as defined as a lower unemployment rate than the national, then the indexing would kick. If our unemployment rate is higher for the year than the national unemployment rate, it would not kick. And so basically what it does is when we're at full employment, it still allows the increase to go up. But when our unemployment rate is too high and people are having a hard time finding jobs or small business cannot create jobs, this allows us to some stability so we can hopefully get unemployment, get job creation going. I would also say that in its current state, our minimum wage is at least $1.85 higher than the federal. It's also approximately $1.48 higher than the other states' averages of minimum wage. So even with this bill in, we would still be well above the national average. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Urger.
Yes. One of the things that bothers me about this is that when we have something on the ballot and voters vote for it, and then later we think it doesn't quite work or they don't quite understand it or all the excuses that we give, and then we continue to change it. Would you like to just comment on that? I think we have a real interest in trying to maintain credibility and integrity with our voters.
For the record, Representative Berger and Chair Flores, I think you absolutely make a good argument there. The issue as it relates to this is when you and everybody can talk about what voters meant and everything else, but obviously as the person that ran the campaign, I do know when you talked about minimum wage increases, I think the voters understood the 690 and everything else. When you talked about the indexing, the future increases, support dropped off. And I would say that, you know, that's always an issue we can talk about. Did they mean or didn't they mean? But when you look at what we were looking at as of November, our national unemployment rate was still at 6.3, 6.4, somewhere in there. Our state unemployment rate was at 7. And, you know, talking to small businesses, we all do, our unemployment rate has gone up. It at one point peaked a whole percent and a half in the last 6 months, which I, in my experience, have never seen a drastic increase in the unemployment rate at that period. So it's why, you know, I don't keep coming into this because it's never an easy issue on either side. I don't think it is for any of you, whether you support the bill or you don't. But when you look at what employers are truly looking for, whether they're agriculture, small businesses, restaurants, they're trying to find a way to keep people employed at this point. And when you see a drastic increase in the unemployment rate of a percent and a half over 6 months, I truly think my members keep asking me, we've got to do something to try to bring some stability so we can get people back to work. And I would say this is a unique example from it barely passed by basically a percentage point, and you've had a point and a half increase in the unemployment rate. And I would say if you would feel comfortable to vote for this, I do think when you explain that to voters, they do understand it. You know, I said people may always agree or disagree, but I do think it does give us an ability to say things have changed since this passed. The unemployment rate has gone up for a point and a half, and my members' views is we would like to see something done to try to help job creation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Further questions, Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell us in the last several years how many months that the calculation would result in an increase in wages based on this bill?
Representative Barnhart, Chair Doran, members of the committee. I don't have them in front of me, but I obviously, as it relates to this issue, I've been saying Measure 36, which was the last minimum wage increase that passed in 1996, we were a full point below the unemployment rate when that measure passed. When you went up through the, that was a three-tiered increase. At the third tier increase, we were about a half a percentage point ahead. So the first 2 years, it would have been a full indexing if we were under an indexing. The third one, it would have been roughly half, which it still allows you to calculate. And then from about a, then we had a couple of months there for a few years, but since I would say the last 3 years we have had very few, if any, under the national unemployment rate. We've been almost up until before actually this measure passed, we were creeping back closer to the national rate. But I would say in the last 3 years, we probably were over the full calendar year. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
From about 2000 on, we were over. About 88 or 98, 99, would have had a few months we were over, but previous to that, we were well under the national rate for, you know, many, many years.
Okay.
Follow up?
Thank you, if I may. This recent election in which we had an indexing, could you tell us when that was? I'm sorry, I'm foggy on that, and also what the vote percentages were, if you know.
Representative Barnhart, Chair Doyle, if I understand your question, this recent election, which is last November, passed the initiative.
It was last November?
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing how time flies.
Yeah, and basically it wasn't an indexing increase, it was an automatic 40-cent increase, which when you look at the indexing on Washington the last 2 or 3 years, it's been about 22-cent average. And so we haven't officially had an indexing increase, it was just a 40% increase, and this keeps it in. And it was basically, it was just under my... You know, like I said, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I think it was like 50.9 to 49.1. It was somewhere in that range. It's about 51.49.
If I may, this was the election in which the indexing thing was put in, isn't it?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? All right. Thank you for testimony. That's of course.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 332 to the floor with a due...
Need to adopt.
Oh, excuse me. Strike that. Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the -A4 amendments to Senate Bill 332.
Representative Flores moves adoption of the -A4 amendments to Senate Bill 332. Discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Chair, we're all aware of the shifts that have occurred in the economy over the last 15 years or so. With the, in Oregon at least, the great tech boom and then the tech bust that occurred nationwide. I think the implication of the testimony we've heard is that the minimum wage somehow or another caused change in employment, and somehow or another not indexing the minimum wage when our unemployment rate is higher is somehow or another going to have something to do with curing it. No one actually said that, I don't believe, but that certainly is the implication. I don't believe there's any evidence to support that assertion at all. Minimum wage is extremely low, even at the level that it's at now, to generate the income needed to meet the federal poverty level. Working 40 hours a week is significantly higher than the minimum wage currently set in Oregon. The Oregon minimum wage is still below, adjusted for inflation, what the minimum wage was when it was established. I forget exactly when, 40 or 50 years ago. And so I'm opposed to the bill.
Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the House Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs Committee, we had extensive testimony about the minimum wage indexing. Recently, there was a call center in Albany that went out of business after only being there for 2 years. It was a major business that came in last session. We were very excited about it. They went out of business because of the economy. So we were faced with a large vacant building there at Heritage Mall, which is a very busy shopping center. Recently, a new business looked at locating in Oregon in that building. But when my Linn County Commissioner explained the minimum wage indexing, they were very surprised by that, and they declined to locate here. The problem with it is it's a fixed cost that business has to pay that increases every year, regardless of the economy. They don't have a minimum wage in China, and we have to face that. We have to be able to compete globally, and so for that reason, I'm going to support this change.
Further discussion? Representative Berger.
I have to agree, Mr. Chairman, that with the world market, it makes it very difficult. My problem is the credibility with voters, and I know times change and things change. On the other hand, I also think we have to be careful that we don't hold too many people at minimum wage. It's very tough to support a family and eat and pay rent and just keep a roof over your head this day and time with people trying to work two jobs. Many times the minimum wage worker is the second person in the family, or maybe even the third and fourth person where teenagers are working. And I think we have to be careful that we provide jobs that provide a living for people, that they are able to eat, stay healthy, educate their children. Otherwise, they're right back on other services that we have at the state. And so, for that reason, I have to oppose the bill.
Okay. Further discussion. Representative Monis Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been a very difficult vote for me the last time we voted on it, and it's a difficult vote for me this time also. It's one of those issues that's been that I've had more discussion about with people from my district than other than public education, which is usually one of the most important things that people want to talk to about. But with the number of small businesses in my district, many of them have told me that they have actually cut jobs. There's a pizza parlor in my district. The owner has two small pizza parlors. He now has eliminated, he had a window washer. He has eliminated the window washer. And we also have a number of farms also. And when I have farmers telling me that it is far cheaper for the market is much more competitive in Michigan, which pays, I think, $5 and 80 cents or 70 cents anyway, it's less than $6 an hour, that it's very hard to compete. And so for the same reasons that I voted for it the first time, I will be voting yes again this time.
Okay. Any further discussion? All right, call the roll, please. Right.
Aye.
No.
Both on.
Aye. I just had a real moment here as to how I was going to vote. I'm going to vote no.
Chair votes aye, and the A4 amendments are adopted to Senate Bill 332.
Chair moves Senate Bill 332 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Flores moves Senate Bill 332 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative
Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
No.
Chair Doyle.
Chair votes aye. Representative Close. Okay, this bill. Representative Close for carrying. Senate Bill 332 then moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That closes the work session on Senate Bill 332. And moving now to a work session on Senate Bill 763 and ask Senator Starr to come up and explain the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, it's State Senator Bruce Starr from Senate District 15 in Western Washington County. I appreciate the Chair scheduling Senate Bill 763 for work this afternoon. I have with me John Chandler to assist in the technical questions as it relates to the land use process. In a nutshell, what we're attempting to accomplish in Senate Bill 763 is a process that relates only to the metro boundary in Portland. Currently, the Metro Council has the responsibility and the control of the urban growth boundary in the metro area, and they have to accommodate a 20-year land supply. And so there's periodic expansion of that urban growth boundary to accommodate that statute, state statute. What we've attempted to do, or what we're trying to do in this bill, is as Metro follows the state statute and expands the urban growth boundary, currently they can look at the boundary as a whole and say, we need to accommodate more land for housing. And they can do that, quite frankly, by expanding the urban growth boundary in one quadrant or one section of the urban growth boundary. They could put all of the expansion in Clackamas County or put all of the expansion in Washington County. What we've attempted to do here is to have Metro, instead of doing all of this expansion, say, in one end of the Metro Council, which is the Metro District, which is, I think, about 43 miles across, require Metro to look at the urban growth boundary and then do a sub-regional analysis. Basically say, let's not just look at the urban growth boundary in the metro area as one big whole, but let's look at it sub-regionally. So if they can do an analysis, say, of Washington County, and say, is there a need in Washington County for urban growth boundary expansion for the accommodation of more housing? In Multnomah County, they can do the same thing. Or in the southern part of the metro district, they can do the same thing. Or in Clackamas County, they can do the same thing. It makes very little sense, in my opinion, to expand the urban growth boundary as it relates, as it currently is, and have all of the expansion in say one part of the urban growth boundary district, and say you have a jobs in the other side of the metro count of the metro districts. And it tends to have impacts as it relates to transportation, particularly, and that's another one of my issues that I've tried to work on in this legislature. The -88 amendments that are before you are the amendments that we've worked extremely hard on to get the various factions to agreement on. At this point, we have agreements between the home builders and the realtors, the small cities that in my district in Washington County that this is an important issue to, and Metro itself. I think that we've compromised. We didn't get everything that we would have liked, but I think that what we have today is an improvement over the current process. Currently, there is an LCDC rule that allows for the Metro Council to do the sub-regional analysis. What this bill does is clarifies that rule and then asks that Metro implement the rule. Again, I'm not a land use expert, and if there is kind of a technical kind of questions as it relates to land use, John Chandler is here to help answer those questions.
Thank you. Mr. Chandler, the -8s, is that just incorporating what's already being done by rule, or is that something new?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, John Chandler, Legislative Advocates here on behalf of the Oregon Building Industry Association. To answer your question, Mr. Chairman, they incorporate the existing rule, but they also add some clarification and sideboards that the various parties have agreed upon. As Senator Starr indicated, the LCDC has a rule that allows sub-regional analysis, and he did a good job of explaining what that entails. I won't go back over it. What the -8 amendments do is various pieces, if you will, for the combatants. There was a concern that the sub-regional rule didn't necessarily require Metro, in doing sub-regional analysis, to go through all of the alternative analysis they currently do on moving about it, looking at increased density, better efficiency of land uses, and so forth. That's what the first major change in the -4 is intending to address, to make it clear that no, the provisions of state law in 197-298 apply to sub-regional analysis just as they do to boundary expansions. That was an important issue for some folks. The rest of the Dash 8s, as I say, make some changes that are beneficial to Metro. They make some changes that are beneficial to the cities in Washington County and the region, and also for the building industry that I think other folks have agreed to. For example, Metro right now has 2 years to accommodate boundary. Any need identified, this changes that to 1 year. But also, currently, Metro has to go 5 years between reviews. This changes that to 7. They get a little bit more time at Metro at the local level to actually do the analyses. We're also trying to say with these, as Senator Starr indicated, that they should use the sub-regional approach if they need additional land in the boundary. I want to make it clear for the record, this in no way presupposes that the boundary will move, it in no way presupposes that there is a land need, but it simply says if, after having gone through all the other statutory and LCDC rule requirements, if there is a need for additional land, Metro should look on a sub-regional basis, which is the intent, I believe, behind the LCDC rule.
Okay. Representative Berger.
I'd like a clarification, please, on inventory. Are you referring here to the 20-year list of buildable land that that each county or each region submits? In the, I believe that's in the review.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, yes, it is the 20-year land inventory.
A follow-up. Wouldn't it be possible, rather than having it in statute, to just have it in administrative rule, or for the commission to simply agree to that? What need was there to put it into statute?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, that was a heck of a gun battle about six sessions ago. I know why I think it was important to put it in statute, because I was the one that put it there, and I'll be glad to tell you why I think it ought to stay there.
Okay.
But essentially, it was the intent there when we passed House Bill 2709 in 1995, I believe, was to provide guidance for the state local governments on what constituted adequate land supply, which is what the rule said. And I believe it's worked pretty well to say that here's how you analyze land need, here's the things you have to look at in terms of increased density, other efficiencies inside the boundary, as well as a forward look at what the community is going to need. It seems to function, I believe, fairly well.
Further questions? Representative Mona Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had gotten a note here that Metro has worked is in agreement to the with the amendments, and I also know that Thousand Friends had been a part of this too. Are they opposed to the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moses Anderson, I believe they're okay with the bill, although they've never asked me to carry their water, and I'm not meaning to at this point. That's my understanding, but if someone here from Thousand Friends wants to say otherwise, that's certainly
another question.
Back now.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 763.
Senator Flores moves adoption of the Dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 763. Discussion?
Mr. Chair,
Representative,
I think that I will be a yes, but I, again, because things are coming so fast, and I don't feel that in a democratic process we should have all stakeholders presenting and discussing things with us, that I will be a no until, but maybe a yes on the floor after I've talked to a couple of other stakeholders that I feel I need to hear from on this particular bill. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to say that while I'm not really excited about putting everything into statute and into law and having to tell people exactly how they ought to be fair, I think sometimes if that's required and people want to be territorial, we have to do that. I do believe that this looks like a very fair approach, and for that reason I would support the bill.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Representative Close.
What's aye?
Representative Torres.
Aye.
Representative Northen.
No.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Chair Doyle.
Chair votes aye. Dash A8s are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 763 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
President Flores moves Senate Bill 763 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Backlund.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. We're voting on the bill?
Yes.
Yes, I'm a no.
Representative
Close.
Votes aye.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative
Lindner.
No.
Representative
Berger.
Aye.
And Chair Doyle.
Chair votes aye. I ask Representative Backlund to carry this bill. Closes the work session on Senate Bill 763 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 915 and ask Representative Dalto to come forward and explain his amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Billy Dalto, State Representative, Oregon House District 21. We have before you Senate Bill 915. I have three amendments to this bill. The dash A7s, which you should have, are a technical fix that is needed to accomplish the intention of the bill. There are two other amendments, the dash A8s and the dash A9s. This is a bill about public safety facilities and exclusive farming zones. Right now, law enforcement is not a permitted use for it is not permitted use, an outright permitted use in the exclusive farming zone, and so this bill would allow law enforcement to be a conditional use or sub 2 use in the exclusive farming zone. I would ask the committee to pass the A9 amendments, which eliminate completely a buffer zone that was placed in by the Senate, which would be a zone of 3 miles from the city limits of an individual municipality wherein law enforcement would not be able to cite. So I'd ask you to move the A9s.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, you're saying within the buffer they could build this?
Right now they cannot. Representative Close, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry?
This would allow it.
This would allow it.
Thanks.
All right.
Question?
Sure. Question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had another bill, 3561, that passed the House 49-5. How is this different than that bill?
Thank you for the question, Representative Mara Sanderson, Mr. Chair. 3561 was my original bill. It went over to the Senate side and landed in the Senate Land Use and Water Committee, and that committee shut down early and abruptly and was sort of caught without action there. So we dropped this bill, materially the same contents, through the Senate Rules Committee, and so we have Senate Bill 915. Now, the difference between 3561 and Senate Bill 915 is that 3561 placed law enforcement outright as an outright permitted use in the exclusive farm use zone, where we have, for example, rural fire protection as a permitted outright permitted use in the rural exclusive farm use zone. This bill doesn't go as far as 3561. This bill places law enforcement in the sub 2 conditional use, but does grandfather in the Marion County property, but future properties would be sub 2 uses.
Follow up.
And
how is the Farm Bureau on this?
You'd probably have to ask them. My understanding is that they wanted to see a buffer zone. They understand the importance of having law enforcement in the exclusive farm use zone. They wanted to see a buffer zone.
Any further questions? All right. Thank you for testimony. Council Flores.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Dash A9 amendments to Senate Bill 915.
Council Flores moves adoption of the Dash A9 amendments to Senate Bill 915. Any discussion? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just not sure that I really have looked at this bill close enough. I'm going to vote no today. However, I may vote yes on the floor.
Further discussion?
Okay.
Representative Moss Anderson?
Thank you. I just need to clarify now. The A9s remove all buffer zone language, correct? And does anyone know? And then the A8 has the buffer zone at 1 mile. And the good representative in Salem is wanting the A9, which gets rid of all buffer zones so that these facilities can be put anywhere or just...
Mr. Chair, may I respond? Yeah. That's right. The Senate had decided to put in an amendment that that provided for a 3 mile buffer zone, and I had the AA drafted to change that from 3 miles to 1 mile in case the committee decided that they wanted to retain the buffer zone.
Okay. And you wanted the A9?
Yes.
And the A9 removes all buffer zone language.
Right. It's my, Mr. Chair and Representative Morris Anderson, it's my opinion that the sheriff as the highest elected law enforcement official of a particular county should not have an unnecessary restriction on where they would site a law enforcement facility.
Not on this issue.
Okay. All right. Are we in discussion?
No. We have... We are still in discussion on adoption of the A9s.
Okay. Mr. Chair, again, I don't feel this is a fair democratic process where all stakeholders have not been able to provide information to us as a committee, and we aren't even the substantive committee to deal with land use issues or wherever this would go, even judicial. I don't know where the last bill went, so I will be a no.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Beck.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I know we're under discussion of the dash A9s. If we pass those, what is the impact of the on the dash 2? Is that a different?
It is different.
Yeah. And it's different. So we just were handed this.
Correct.
Yeah.
We'll take up the dash A2s after we move adoption, or after this discussion's over on the A9s.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Can you cover Representative Backlund?
No, that's fine.
Okay. Representative Boris?
Mr. Chair, I'm a little ill at ease, and I will give a courtesy vote to move this to the floor, but I think I need to have some further discussions as well.
Okay. One further?
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Representative Backlund?
That's kind of my feeling, too, that it's difficult to really... Get sink our teeth into this in a relatively short moment as notice, but so I'll go with the courtesy vote today and have more time to reconsider at a later time.
Okay, thank you. Let's call the roll, please.
Representative Kaplan.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
No.
Representative Close?
Okay.
Representative
Flores?
Aye.
Representative
Moss
Anderson?
No.
Representative Berger?
No.
Chair Doyle?
Chair votes aye. Dash A9s are adopted. And Representative Przanski? Take us through the dash twos, please.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. The dash twos are basically going to just take a current statute that's found in ORS 215.213 sub 1 and move it into 215.213 sub 2. The reason for this change is a constituent has been in contact with my office as well as the county, Lane County, as to radio control operations of airplanes, and these are locations where these planes are able to take off and come back. Currently, under the statutes as it's currently written, the county has little to no authority to have any type of standards or minimum standards applied to these fields. By pushing it or moving it from the dash or from the sub 1 to the sub 2, They will have greater authority to make certain that they are being regulated as anything else would be under the dash twos, based on the standards for approval of certain uses in exclusive farm use zones. That's all it does. I'll try to answer any questions if you have. Lastly, I guess what I would say is that the Lane County Use and Public Works Department are the ones that told us this is what they felt they needed to have done, so they would be able to have a little bit more control over, like, the hours of operation, etc.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Representative Pruszynski. I'm moving these things from one subsection of the statute to another subsection of the statute accomplishes what?
Okay.
I was trying to track, but I don't think I do it.
Okay. Under the subsection 1 of 215.213, it has permitted uses that are in exclusive farm use zone areas, which radio control airplanes are currently located. When you move it into the subsection 2 instead of subsection 1, then those type of uses are subject to ORS 215.296. That section of the statute basically just says there are standards for approval of certain uses in exclusive farm use areas. So that in itself will allow for greater regulation through the standards that are required for those type of uses within the exclusive farm use areas. So that's why it needs to be moved.
Philip?
Oh, thank you. Could you give us an idea of what prompted this request on the part of your constituent?
My understanding is the area in question has operations from anywhere from 7 a.m. until even in the evening. The most frequent hours are starting at 7 a.m. to midday. And the noise has become a problem. Planes also flying over the property and control, just not being able to carry on their lifestyle within this exclusive farmland use area. And apparently she had been in contact with the county regarding their concerns, and the county said that where it's currently set in the statute, they would have little to no ability to do regulations. And they suggested that she contact my office, which she did. My staff, in turn, contacted back to the county. And in speaking to those certified people, they said this is what needs to happen.
Okay. Further questions?
No, thank you.
All right. We just got word from Legislative Council that these dash two amendments are not related to the A engrossed version of 915. They actually refer to the original bill as it was Senate Bill 915, and Legislative Council asked that if we were going to move this amendment that we give them a couple hours to actually redraft it in a form that actually deals with the bill that we're addressing otherwise, you know, currently. So I think at this point, I mean, we can't move the dash twos. So, you know, it's the kind of thing, Representative, it's up to you if you want to just hold off.
Mr. Chair, what I'll do is I'll ask the committee I know that you have a lot of stuff on your agenda. If this is something that you think the committee is going to continue to meet, I'll ask for that to be done. If this is something that's going to be moved immediately, we'll wait for another day.
Okay. Let's then just hold off on moving this bill, and we'll go from there.
Thank you.
Thank you. That closes the work session on Senate Bill 915. And open up a work session on Senate Bill 538. Colleagues, you have a number of amendments to consider. Senate Bill 538. The The original bill, the Ann Grost version of Senate Bill 538 is mass gatherings that is actually not going to be considered. We're looking to gotten stuff with the additional amendments that are to be considered today. And you have before you the -12s, A12s, and -A13s. And the -823s and the -824s. And I understand Representative Barnhart has also asked that the -825s be distributed.
Yes, sir.
So I think what I'd like to do is first consider the A24s, which is kind of turning into the centerpiece of this legislation. And we have there was a bill that was already passed out of the House Bill 3013, and that one had to do with the aggregate resources issue. It got hung up in conference committee, and in essence, after discussions with the governor's office, with members of both sides of this issue, the aggregate industry, the Farm Bureau, Thousand Friends, and let's see, it was the A24s were produced as a compromise, and the one issue that remained was whether the Goal 5 process should be, as it's focused only on the Willamette Valley area, should that be expanded in addition to the those listed on page 5 of the proposed amendment, should also include Douglas County, which is what's incorporated in the A25 amendment. So what you see in the A24 and A25 is absolutely no difference between them, except for that page 5 piece that shows Douglas County on the A25s. And this, the A24s are being presented by the chair, and this again is just after various discussions with different folks. The governor's office is really doesn't have a position on either one, but the aggregate industry prefers A24s. Farm Bureau prefers A25s. So, further discussion on the A24s. Yeah, Representative Barnhart.
Okay. So I think that's a very good summary of the place we find ourselves, and I'm not sure how much everybody on this committee has followed all of these issues. But one additional point I'd like to make is that, as I understand it, and I have to admit that a lot of this is sort of secondhand and by rumor and innuendo, so if I get it wrong, maybe somebody can correct me. But as I understand it, there was a lawsuit involving a Beaver State company, and that was the name of the lawsuit, that involved some farmland in Douglas County that led to the conclusions that in some ways we're trying to undo with the statute, because of a number of concerns that people had that the result of that lawsuit would lead to the inability of the transportation, the Department of Transportation, to get the aggregate that it needed to do its work. Senate for House Bill 3013, again, as I understand it, from admittedly partisan sources, was basically the response of being fed a cookie and you'll take an arm. That's an overstatement, I suspect. But and this bill, as I understand it, is sort of a compromise that will allow the state to get on with its business. The key issue is the landowner in Douglas County going to get the benefit of having won his lawsuit or not? And that's the reason I brought the A25s. In effect, we're trying to change not only the general rule, but also the specific rule, but also exclude him from benefiting from his lawsuit, because as I understand it, these amendments apply primarily to the Willamette Valley, or at least the amendments on the end of the bill, and on the end of the A24s or the A25s, that talk about the requirements for mining in which 35% or more of the soils are class 1 and class 2. And if I'm reading this correctly, that's in the section 4 sub 2 portion of the bill. And Mr. Chair, I would hope that the committee passes the A25s. I think that they would allow the landowner who brought all this matter up and who has essentially caused us to clarify this law to get the benefit of his efforts.
Thank you. Basic reason for moving the A24s, or when we moved the A24s, is it was a difficult decision in that knowing that the Beaver State case had been decided in favor of the plaintiff farmers instead of and went against the aggregate company, was that that decision, as I looked at it, was based pretty much on a technicality, overturning a law that has been in place for over 30 years. And even though I felt that in some way there should be a way to recognize that the farmers actually won a case and put their time and effort into that case, that the decision was actually the decision actually overturned a law that had been in place for over 30 years, and what we were trying to do with the A24s is return back to that status quo. And it's something that it was a difficult decision to make, but the fairness issue here is that we actually bring the law back to its original status and not provide an additional exception for a county, Douglas County, that is not part of the Willamette Valley, and for that reason, proposing the A24s. So, further discussion?
Mr. Chair, you gave a nice outline at the beginning. On your A24s, you were talking about some groups that came together to compromise and were okay with A24. Which were those groups again?
The compromise, it was actually more a decision by the governor's office that this will be the compromise. It's one of those things I don't think any party's very necessarily happy with. The aggregate industry had indicated their that they would agree with the dash 24s as long as it did not include Douglas County. The Farm Bureau said they'll agree with the dash 24s as long as it did include Douglas County. And that's kind of where we are.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. What's the state of the floor? Do we have a motion on the floor?
Representative Flores is going to move the A24s.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 824 amendments to Senate Bill 538.
Representative Flores moves adoption of the Dash 824 amendments to Senate Bill 538. Discussion? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chairman, I have a problem where we have a process, and it's a legal process. And if I have in any way been injured and I want to go through this process, whether it goes to LUBA, whether it goes into the court, and it's up to me to pay for whatever attorney fees or whatever the process is, and I win my case. Yeah, if if I have presented my case in such a way it overturns something that's been in place 30 years, I must have done a good job in presenting my case. But I think if a person loses the case and then comes to the legislature, and this has happened, not just this, but it was also in the 01 session, I believe. I don't see us as an alternative when everybody goes through these cases and goes all the way to the Supreme Court sometimes, that we then are the one that should say, well, you know, that was nice in the court, but maybe they didn't make the right decision. And also I don't like the exclusiveness. If Douglas County has a problem, why not include them? So for that reason, I have trouble with the 824.
Representative Moss Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was some good lobbying from some farmers that came to me to talk about these amendments, and the farms that I believe they must be in Douglas County, I assume, talking about how this will impact their fresh market. When you have a gravel pit near your berries, especially raspberries, because you can't wash raspberries, and you pick them for the fresh market, and then you have a gravel pit right now, they can't grow raspberries anymore. When I took a look at some of the maps they showed me and seeing that 90% of Lane, more than 90% of the Class 1 soils in Lane County have been reclaimed to, the gravel pits are building, I just hate to see the same thing happening in Douglas County, too. This is a compromise. I think it would be far better to go with the A25s, but I can't even agree to the A25 at this point in time. So I'll be a no.
Further discussion, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move the A25s as a substitute for the A24s.
Okay. Representative Barnhart. Representative Barnhart moves the dash A25s as a substitute to the A24s. That motion does supersede the current motion before us and subject to vote. So, Representative Barnhart?
Thank you. I just wanted to add one point that I neglected before. One of the major farm activities which is still profitable in Oregon is the activity of the direct sales farms. They're mostly truck farms, mostly doing various kinds of produce. The issue that Representative Mona Sanderson and Representative, Bridger both addressed on the direct sales farms is a very, very important one. I have a number of direct sales farms in my district, the Eugene Farmers Market that meets on Saturdays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays during the summer, routinely has farmers coming up from Douglas County where they produce melons and a number of other crops that are sold at direct sales farms. We recently passed two measures that allow those who qualify under WIC and also seniors to be able to use coupons to purchase at direct sales farmers markets. The problem that we have, and that was illustrated in the litigation the permitting process in Lane County, and the one I'm familiar with, is exactly the dust problem that Representative Mona Sanderson refers to. This is not a small matter. We're talking about some of the most productive farmland in the state, down in the river bottoms along the streams, and it's the place where a good deal of our fresh direct sales produce is being produced. So it's a huge matter for the farmers, as well as being an important matter for aggregate producers. I submit that this is a that this bill is certainly a compromise. It deals with the major issue raised in the Weaver State case. It will allow ODOT to get the aggregate that it needs for its projects in the A25s. I would urge an aye vote on the amendment.
And the motion before us is adoption of the A25 amendments. Call the roll, please.
Representative Backlund.
No.
Representative Bornhardt.
Aye.
Representative Close.
No.
Representative Flores.
No.
Representative Monis Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Chair Doyle?
Chair votes no. Motion is defeated. And we're back to the A24s. Further discussion on the A24s? All right, call the roll, please.
Representative Backlund?
Aye.
Representative Bornhardt?
Aye.
Representative Close?
Both aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative
Monis
Anderson?
No.
Representative Berger?
No.
Chair Doyle?
Chair votes aye. A24s are adopted. Colleagues, you had the dash A20s handed in to you as well. There are, although it's kind of a thick amendment, it's actually only two issues that are being dealt with here. And I'm going to ask John Chandler to come forward to talk about 2508 and Ross A.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I was wondering if maybe to help explain some of the kind of the policy behind the A20s, if Ms. Phillips can come up and join us as well, just in case there's any questions about where the amendments came from. If not, that's fine. The A20s, in light of the adoption of the A25s,
You adopted the A24s,
excuse me. And I think those were your traditional gut and stuff, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
The A20s are also a gut and stuff. So the A14s are just a stuff, so which accomplished the same, which stuff the same, which stuff the same substantive provisions into the bill. So
okay. The A14s aren't before us. We'll just deal with Legislative Council on making sure that they understand.
Okay. The A20s contain what is the product of a significant amount of discussion, negotiation, and effort with Oregonians in Action and LCDC. The first part of the bill, the second part of the bill, is the infamous Golf Course Snack Shack bill, which passed out of the House 38-18, and I'm told everybody on the committee, except for one, supported the bill on the floor. We've worked out the language with DLCD, and my understanding, when I talked to the representative today, and I don't mean to talk to him, testify for him, but he did say that they were okay with the golf course snack shack portion of the bill. The other section of the bill rectifies what's called the Amhill County case, and I'm not as up to date on that as I probably should be, but Mr. Chandler certainly is, and he can answer any questions you might have about that. And we have, I will say this, we have worked out the language with DLCD and the A20s, and it is my understanding they're okay with the amendments.
Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler, Legislative Advocates here on the dash A20 to 538. With regard to the Amhill County case that Mr. Day mentioned, this bill began life as House Bill 2860, came through the Environment and Land Use Committee, passed the floor of the House, stalled in the Senate. And without getting into a whole bunch of land use mumbo-jumbo, there's a process called exceptions that one can take, a local government can take, or an applicant can ask for, where you don't quite fit the land use rules on the books. You take an exception to them. It's usually an exception to Goal 3 and 4 of farming and forestry. It's been around since the land use system was commenced. one particular opinion, the court created a basically a null set, and they said that you could only take an exception if your use wasn't, if you had a use that's authorized by the zone but didn't comply, you couldn't take an exception. That was not how LCDC administered it over the years from back in the 80s. It was simply an aberration. And what this bill would do, the first section of the dash A20s would say, it's on the top of page 2 of the A20 amendments, that asking LCDC to do rules, which they have indicated they can do without creating a fiscal, that they have some generic ruling. I've been Mr. Evers here, I believe, or Mr. Indy, if I'm speaking that incorrectly, they can correct me, I hope. To say that go out and write a rule that says you can take an exception to a use that is authorized by the statute, but you can't comply because of topography or something else. We worked out these amendments in the House in 2860 with 1,000 Friends and with the DLCD. It's my understanding that both organizations are fine with this current manifestation. As near as I can tell, Mr. Chairman, it's identical to the bill that was passed.
Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Berger.
Yes. On page 32.
That would be me.
That's,
there you go.
That's all in the bill. That's just a part of the bill. So nothing changes as far as the exceptions until you get to the golf course?
Chair Doyle, Representative Berger, that's correct.
And the golf course facilities would serve only people who have been playing golf there or their guests.
Chair Doyle, Representative Berger, I don't know that I would go so. It depends, I suppose, on what your definition of playing golf is. If playing golf includes going to the driving range or hitting on the, or hitting, or, you know, putting or any of those sorts of things, then that's perfect. Then they would be allowed to the extent they need to be allowed to purchase a hot dog at the Snack Shack.
Well, and looking at the language too, it's those who patronize the golf course.
Right.
So, I mean, they may not necessarily be golfers.
Right. That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Further questions?
Just for your reference, it was House Bill 3247. I don't think I put that on the record. So.
Thank you. Representative Moss Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The page 2 piece, just so that I understand that, that DCLD is okay with that and environmental groups are okay with that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moss Anderson, the only environmental group I talked to is 1,000 Friends, who usually object to being called an environmental group, but they're fine with it.
Okay.
Essentially, what we're trying to do is restore the way the law had functioned for 20-some years prior to the Anhel County case.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Further questions? All right. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the dash A20 amendments to Senate Bill 538.
Representative Flores moves adoption of the dash A20 amendments to Senate Bill 538. And again, just to clarify for the record, even though the dash A20s are considered a gut and stuff, that the elimination of the original bill of Senate Bill 538 was already handled with the A24s. So as far as what the legislative council needs to know is that we are intending to combine at this point the A24s with the A20s.
Well, Mr. Chair, just for the record, I would be perfectly happy if we adopted them as is.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right.
Representative Backson.
Aye.
Representative Barnes.
Aye.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Monsanders.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Chair Doyle.
Chair votes aye.
Mr. Chair.
And the,
I'm sorry, I need to change my vote to no.
Okay.
Thank you.
And the A20s are adopted. We will now consider the A12s. Mr. Kosasan, explain to us what the A12s are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Richard Kosasan, Water for Life. The dash A12 amendments represent an effort to find a home for a bill that was lost in the Senate, 3297. The bill was approved in the House originally and moved to the Senate and was stuck, along with a number of other pieces of legislation in the Senate Water and Land Use Committee. Did not receive a hearing there, and we are trying to find a nice warm home for it. It's a fairly, I think, straightforward bill. Deals with structures on waterways, and it is an attempt to clarify the process for the maintenance of such structures and to avoid future problems. And I can say with confidence that when the bill was considered by the House or the full House, well over 71% of the members on your committee supported it.
Thank you. Further, any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger.
I need clarification on it. You're talking about a lot of structures on the bayfront in the city of Coos Bay. Are you not talking about all those structures? This is, these are existing structures. They are located on a waterway. And explain to me now why they need to obtain a permit, lease, or easement from state lands when that's already the case.
Chair Doyle and Representative Berger, I think you've hit the nail on the head. The way the bill is constructed, it would grandfather existing structures, diversions, pumps, irrigation works, docks, and piers, and it would avoid an additional permitting process down the road in terms of waterways with a navigability determination. And these types of determinations will arise in the future. They have arisen recent years, and they will be more prevalent in the future. And again, this is an attempt to avoid conflicts in the future on these types of issues.
Mr. Chair, follow up. Okay, I think, however, if I'm going to put a new structure in the future on a navigable waterway, I'm talking about, I could be talking about a sizable lease in terms of a financial investment. And I think that I'd like for you to address that. What approximately would it cost me on a navigable waterway to put a any kind of structure on it?
Chair Doyle and Representative Berger, that question I cannot answer. What again, we're trying to do here is grandfather existing structures in. So those types of structures that have been out there for a number of years don't get caught up in an unforeseen problem in the future. But in terms of your cost for a new structure, I'm not equipped to answer that.
Mr. Chair, actually, in that case, that would probably take care of most everything on Front Street in Coos Bay, which would prevent those people from having that kind of big financial investment because they have been there many, many, many years since the 1900s. So in that case, I would support.
Further discussion. Representative Bernhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm sorry, I need help parsing this bill. How does this amendment grandfather in existing uses? I'm just missing it. Maybe it's because the word grandfather is not in it.
Chair Doyle and Representative Barnhart, the way the bill is constructed, the way the amendment is constructed, if you would, you need to read through it as I did about twice to make certain that you're suggesting that a permit will not be required that could otherwise be required in the future.
Thank you. And as you were getting ready with your answer, Representative Close pointed me to line 13, which of course answers my question. Thank you.
All right, further discussion.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Councilor Forrest.
And I also would point you to line 19, Representative Barnhart, where it is talking about owners of existing structures.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Dash A-12 amendments to Senate Bill 538.
Representative Flores moves adoption of the Dash A-12 amendments to Senate Bill 538. Discussion? Any objection? Not? It's ordered. Start to get a little heavy. Let's go ahead and take on the Dash A-13s. And this actually came from the Farm Bureau, and I'm not sure if the Farm Bureau wants to speak to it. Trying to at least address a potential issue, and we've also heard that this is a possibility that could be fixed by rule or could be fixed, or may already be set up in existing statute, but we wanted some clarification.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schoenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. Yes, this is a provision that we put forward based on comments from a member up in Wasco County who is doing business and wants to do business with another farmer in Hood River County. The way the statutes are drafted currently, they were going to put the winery on the parcel in Hood River County, but that gentleman didn't have enough grape vineyards planted, and I understand they run about $50,000 an acre to establish. He didn't have enough planted, or maybe even the possibility of doing it, I'm not sure, financially at least, to establish a winery. They grow two different types of grapes, a cold weather grape in Hood River and a warmer weather grape in Wasco County, and so they wanted to work together on this issue. The statutes do not allow other than contiguous vineyards to qualify the grower to establish a winery. So it requires a minimum of 15 acres on site, or 15 acres contiguous, or a contract to purchase 15 acres of grapes that are contiguous. So the gentleman's grapes in Wasco County wouldn't count toward the ability of this person to establish his winery and for the two of them to work together. That's the reason for the proposed amendments, and that would be to do that as a conditional use. There are other methods. He could establish it as a processing facility. He could establish it as a commercial activity in conjunction with farm use. So there are a couple other avenues, and some have limitations about whether or not you can have a tasting room and do other activities, and some don't have that. Mr. Eber is here from DLCD if you want some clarification on that. But anyway, this was our attempt at rewriting this, so we provide that they can have a 5-acre site vineyard on site that would qualify the winery, and then they can contract for 10 acres from that county or a contiguous county, and that would allow the Hood River and the Wasco County people to work together to establish their winery. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I may have missed this, but where are the wine growers on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, the wine growers do not oppose the bill.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Call the roll, please. Wait a minute, did we move them?
No.
Oh, let's move them.
Then I move adoption of the Dash A-13 amendments to Senate Bill 538.
President Flores moves adoption of the Dash A-13 amendments to Senate Bill 538.
Representative
Backlund.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Monsanders.
Aye.
Representative Bercher.
Aye.
Chair
votes aye, and Dash A-13s are adopted. And brings us down to the A-23s. Mr. Schellenberg, explain the 23s.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau. The Dash 23s deal with the definition of preparation. What does preparation mean? This issue came about because of the agrobiotech bankruptcy a couple of years ago in the grass seed industry, and so there were a number of grass seed cleaners that went out of business at that point under the bankruptcy. There were a few farmers who had their own seed cleaners, and so they began cleaning seed for their neighbors. There has been a couple years gone by now, and there have been some other commercial people who have wanted to come into the grass seed cleaning business. They are now charging that the farmers who have been doing grass seed cleaning for their neighbors, that they aren't qualified to do that because that's processing. And if you're processing for other people, that's a commercial activity in conjunction with farm use. It's our position that this is preparation, not processing. Processing changes the character of the product. Preparation does not. So what we've done here is rewrite the statute so to make it clear that preparation includes cleaning, treatment, sorting, packaging, and storage. All things that do not change the character of the product. Mr. Conley, in rewriting this, has taken some liberty to kind of restructure the whole statute. So the only change actually is, you know, on page 1, line 19, line 19 through 22 is the only change that occurs. Before, it simply said the preparation, or it only talked about preparation, storage, and disposal by marketing. And so we've made just the changes in that section. The rest of the changes are simply a rewrite of what's been deleted on page 2, lines 11 through 23. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Flores?
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Dash A23 amendments to Senate Bill 538.
Representative Flores moves adoption of the Dash A23 amendments to Senate Bill 538. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so ordered. And I think that covers it. Stand at ease for just a moment. Okay, we turn back. We are still in work session on Senate Bill 538. Representative Flores, 538 to the floor.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 538 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Flores moves Senate Bill 538 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, there's some aspects of this bill to like. Unfortunately, the aspects that are not to like are overwhelming, and I will be a no.
Representative Moss Anderson.
I think, yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the most serious problem that we have is with the attempt to set arbitrary standards for dust, flooding, groundwater, and traffic when it comes to aggregate sightings. And I'm extremely concerned about the effect of these sightings on farms, and would have liked to have seen Douglas County included in this, and I will be a no.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Berger.
Mr. Chairman, I represent the north part of Douglas County, and I'd be just very uncomfortable with their being left out. I would be very happy to put my good housekeeping stamp of approval on this bill with the A25s in it, but otherwise I'll have to be a no.
And further discussion? Okay, and just to clarify for the record, Mr. Kelly, can you just go through the amendments that we had adopted and what we're voting on?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 538A and Gross came to the committee. Those amendments that were adopted in this hearing were the dash A24 amendments, the dash A20 amendments, the dash A12 amendments, the dash A13 amendments, and the dash A23 amendments. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, legislative council is also here, and prior to going to the floor, all of these separate amendments are going to be put into a combined amendment.
Okay. Oh, my goodness.
And just to clarify, the original engrossed bill is gone.
That's correct.
Okay.
As in long gone.
Yeah. Just making sure.
Not that that's probably the only reason that this bill may have problems, at least with somebody's vote. But with that, let's take the roll.
Representative Kaplan.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
No.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson.
No.
Representative Berger.
No.
Chair Doyle.
Chair votes aye, and I will carry the bill on this.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Barnhart.
I'd like to give notice of a possible minority report.
Okay. And with that, Senate Bill 538 is moved to the floor of the due pass recommendation. And it closes as amended. It closes the work session on Senate Bill 538. And we'll open up a work session on House Bill 2502. Colleagues, you have the dash twos before you, and Joe Schweinhart, can you come forward and explain the dash two amendment?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Schweinhart, Associated Oregon Industries. The capital gains issue is not new to anyone. I'll try to go through it quickly. What we're trying to do is establish a capital gains cut beginning in the year 06 of a half a point, and then in succeeding years going to 1 point each till it gets down to 4.1% in about 2011. What we'd like to do is try to begin this process of trying to get Oregon off the top rung of a 9% capital gains tax, which is very detrimental to what we believe the business growth and economic growth of the state. We think now is the time to do it. Every study that's ever been done on capital gains confidently states that it increases consumer spending, it increases productivity, it increases tax revenues, and it increases jobs. And we think that this is a move that needs to be done, even if it's delayed, to get Oregon back to where they need to be economically.
questions. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I ask why this issue wasn't raised in the Revenue Committee rather than here?
Mr. Chairman,
there are plenty of bills in the Revenue Committee related to taxation.
Well, it was raised. I mean, there was a bill 2505 that was in the Tax Committee and it couldn't move.
Okay. So you're moving to a different forum?
Yes.
Okay.
Further questions? Representative Barnhart, follow up?
Thank you, if I may, on the matter. Now, if I understand this correctly, you're reducing this by, it looks like 1%.
1.5%.
I'm sorry?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, 1.5% in 06.
Okay. And then eventually it gets to 4.5%?
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. And do you have studies that show that this, the difference between 9% and 4.5% has the kind of effect you're talking about? I certainly understand when we're talking about huge federal tax changes where the shift from 35% capital gains to 18 to 15% capital gains would have an effect on business activities. But is there any, do you have any studies that actually show that 9% to 4.5% makes a difference? And if you have, would you provide those to us?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, I have various studies that shows that capital gains in general provide employment, but I also have one from OTEM who recently put out that goes to 0% this biennium, it would provide 5,000 new jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So, do I have an exact figure? No, I don't, but I can certainly get one for you. But at least from right now, I mean, if you were going to do it now and take it to zero, you'd have 5,000 new jobs you're looking at for this biennium.
Paul, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Sure, Paul.
Thank you. And how many dollars would the state forego if it did adopt the tax that would go to zero?
At this current moment, Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, I don't have those figures in front of me. Obviously, it's going to depend on how the economy moves in the next few years as to which what the levels will be. I can tell you if you take a 1.5% this biennium, it will cost you about $16 million. But we couldn't move that bill, so we're now trying to stretch it out further in an effort to try to get this changes made to get it off the top rung of 9%.
Okay. So, if I may, Mr. Chair, 16 million would, if you drop it 1.5%, so if you dropped it all 9%, it would be six times that, wouldn't it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnhart, I don't think those figures would come out six times that. I think there's a progressive amount that OTEM has those figures, but I just don't have them here in front of me right now because we weren't discussing that bill.
Okay.
But there are numbers.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Poyce.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a series of short questions. Is there a state capital gains tax in the state of Idaho?
Madam Chair, Representative Close, I honestly don't remember. I know I've looked at every figure for every state, but I honestly don't remember offhand.
Do you recall there's a capital gains tax in the state of Washington?
No, there is not.
Okay. You know, one study that occurs to me that you could do is simply pull the businesses that have moved across the river from Portland to Vancouver and ask them why they did that. And I do believe that the difference in the capital gains taxes is a big part of that. Can you tell me if this has ever been before a legislature before this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Close, yes, it has been. In fact, last session it passed both houses. It went to the governor and it was vetoed.
Thank you very much.
Further questions? Representative Moss Anderson?
Just comments. It'll be under discussion.
Okay. Representative Barnhart?
Thank you. Just one more. Isn't it true that a middle class tax cut of about 10% would actually cost about the same amount of money over time and actually do a great deal better job of increasing the economy and producing more jobs? Based on the Oregon model of analysis that we've used in the Revenue Committee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barhart, I don't know the exact figures there, but I can tell you that when you're talking about reducing capital gains, the number of 56% of the returns on capital gains comes from incomes of $0 to $60,000, and that the majority of returns come from those people that are 55, I believe it's 55 or 56 and over. So there is a degree of middle class, retirees, seniors that would benefit from such a cut.
Okay. Do I have an answer to my question? You're answering a different question than I asked.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barnard, I don't know those figures offhand. I haven't compared those two together. And I don't remember that being done in revenue, but obviously it could have been.
Well, it was.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Berger?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a problem for me. We're in a capital gains recession. That's truly what Oregon has faced. Reducing capital gains would be an economic stimulus. But you've got in here January 2006. I mean, we may either be in dire straits by then, or we will have had some economic engines to kick in. Why 2006?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, as you know, we try to talk to this through the Revenue Committee for just now, and with a $13 million price tag, or $15 million price tag, depending on where we are now with capital gains in the economy, and we couldn't get support for it. And we think now is the time to do it. We'd like to see it done now, but the votes don't seem to be there. And we're trying to do is what we're saying is still an important issue. It's still something that needs to be done. And if it takes us going to the point of saying, okay, the state's starting to recover, then this will help business growth long term. And there are two things that are top of the rung for business that detract us from retaining business and from promoting and seeking business. One of those is a high rate of capital gains of 9%. The other one is the high income tax. Now, the high income tax is going to have to be addressed somewhere along with tax restructure. And we understand that. But capital gains can be done now. It can help. I agree with you. If it was done now, it would be much more help. But we can't seem to get that to the point where people will agree. And we think it's minimal cost.
Representative Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe, I may have missed this. Representative Close asked a question about how high our capital gains taxes are. We know they're 9%, but are we among the top tier in America for highest capital gains? Are we number one, number two, or did I miss that? Is that what you asked, Representative? Do you know that, Joe?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Backlund, we are the highest because our high capital gains starts at such a high level. There are other states. Washington has a 9.3. We are second, but when you look when theirs kicks in versus ours, it makes ours the highest.
Mm. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Yeah. Maybe a comment, actually. It seems to me, and we're talking about jobs, it seems to me that if we create a climate that is favorable for business, business will indeed come here and will create jobs, and that then benefits those who are employed a great deal. So you can approach job growth from a number of different angles, but it seems to me the key one, or one of the key ones, is to approach it from the perspective of the health of the private sector. And so I've heard for a long time, long before I got to this legislative body, that high capital gains taxes are kind of a negative for business, particularly Oregon is in a difficult spot, being located quite close to Washington, as we know, and to Nevada. And so I've had a number of people talk to me over a period of time that indicate this is a real problem for job growth in Oregon. So what I'm finally getting to, the bottom line, is I think probably this is a pretty good thing. It's also incremental. It also gives people time to adjust. And the loss of income to the state over this 0.5% incremental is one thing, but if we do create jobs, we may actually increase the revenue to the state of Oregon and do the services that a lot of people like. So I think this is probably but I do believe this is a good thing.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Backlund, that's correct. And one of the things people have to remember is private enterprise is the engine that keeps this economy going. If you want a strong government, you use tax revenues. You need more tax revenues. We need employment. And this is an employment bill. I mean, this provides long-term, puts the money into the economy that provides people with spending and promotes employment.
All right. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I might, I was noticing on page 4 of the bill, these things are coming out very quickly now, that there was a misprint. Page 4, section 4. It has the bill starting in January 1, 2011. That should be 2006. I'm sure it's just...
It goes until 2011, but it begins in 2006.
Oh, one day. Didn't have to tell us about that.
It is correct.
Oh, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you'll notice, Section 4 says that Sections 2 and 3 start after January 1st, 2011, and Section 2 sets the rate at 4.5% from 2011 on, if I'm not mistaken. And the first section of the bill sets up various graduations down.
I'll take your expertise on it. If that's the case, okay. It looked like
I think that's right. Correct. I believe that it is.
So 2011 is right, huh?
Okay.
Mr. Dexter Johnson from Council is here, and he can clarify if I'm right or wrong.
Mr. Chair, members, the fully phased-in capital gains rate will begin for tax year 2001. However, the incremental increases are in Section 1 and they begin in 2006. So I think it is actually drafted as requested.
Okay,
correct.
Okay,
cool.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, further questions? No? All right. Thank you for testimony, Mr. Flores.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. I've noted that Mr. Nesbitt is here. He did a lot of work on this issue, and it might be appropriate for the committee to hear from him.
And we had heard the invited testimony that we were going to hear on this bill.
So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores?
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the -2 amendments to House Bill 2502.
Representative Flores moves adoption of the -2 amendments to House Bill 2502. Discussion? Representative Monis Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Although I don't quibble with the good reasons why we need to look at capital gains, this is not the time to do it. We have an extremely volatile tax system, and I was hoping that we would be going through some tax reform this session. We aren't. Hopefully there's going to be some good work on this in the interim, and that this would be a part of that process, and that is why I will be a no. Also, I wanted to point out we are a state that relies solely on the income tax for our revenue, and the revenue package that we passed was carefully crafted, and it was a compromise, and I don't want to muddy the waters yet. Down the road, maybe I'd vote for this, but not now.
All right. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to make three points, if I may. The comments, I think, were useful that were given to us by invited testimony. Simply note that based on the information that was given to us, each one of those 5,000 jobs that were referred to by a zero-based capital gains tax would cost the state $19,000 each, or maybe a little bit more. Now, that's a pretty high price to pay for job growth in terms of the state budget. Would also note that I think it is that we do need to get on to restructure of our tax system in Oregon. It's important that we do that. We have not done that during this session. We have, in fairness to us, we've had a lot on our plate to deal with during this session, and if we haven't gotten there, I don't think we should beat ourselves up over. But the fact is we haven't, and this should be a piece of the discussion that takes place during the restructure issue. Since this bill doesn't go into effect for a couple of years anyway, there's plenty of time to get this bill, or get this issue and considered in the restructure along with all of the other issues that come up. I'm not a knee-jerk no on capital gains tax reduction. If it were a part of a restructure bill that made sure that business paid its fair share of the costs of government along with individuals. In the aggregate, not in dealing with any particular individual tax, but overall. And so I'm opposed to the bill for that reason. I would also note, in addition, that a properly structured middle-class tax cut would actually produce economic growth and jobs at a higher rate than any other option that the Revenue Committee considered, including the option that's before us today. So if we really want economic growth with based on the tax stimulus process, we would do far better to adopt a middle-class tax cut that would have the stimulative effect greater than the one that we've been talking about today.
Further discussion? Representative Berger.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would... I don't want to be redundant, and I agree with several things that have already been said. However, I think there's a bigger issue here. I think that the capital gains tax would be an economic stimulus, but I think if you're going to talk about 06, then there is plenty of time to look at it in the context of other kinds of reform that we can do. But having said that, I'm going to go a little further, because I think that we have an attitude that we've got to be far more open about employers. And I think if we can change an attitude that is more pro-business at the same time that we're having this discussion of what really does stimulate business and what really does count, and not just focus either on the employer or the employee, but those people as a package in relationship to the taxes that Oregon needs to come up with. I think that we badly need to have that discussion, and so I think 2006 is not the date for this.
Right, further discussion? Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had some really good philosophical discussions about this bill and about what this bill hopes to do, but I had a couple of, well, maybe three comments. One is Oregon is, in fact, a small business state, almost more than any state. We're a small business, and I sometimes think critics of a capital gains tax reduction think of the large corporations that abound in other states, but not so much here in Oregon. And so I think we need to keep in mind the benefit that this would be to small business. And in the 1990s, small business was a real driver of job growth. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it was the driver of job growth. And so I don't think we should forget that. I think a point was made that's a very good point, that we need to look at this perhaps in the context of overall tax reform. I too would like to look at tax reform. I think, frankly, a well-crafted, a well-thought-out sales tax is something that we should not be afraid to at least look at. But that's not going to happen in the short term. And so my approach is, because it's not going to happen in the short term, that makes the capital gains reduction perhaps even more important now. And finally, the reason why 2006 to me is not something that we should delay, the bill would bring certainty so that we could look forward to 2006 and we would know that we have a capital gains tax reduction in 2006. And so in the short term between now and 2006, this could be a real good thing. So just a few comments, but anyway, I remain pleased at the discussion. It's the kind of philosophical discussion that I enjoy very much. And so I appreciate hearing from all of you, but anyway, I'm still a yes.
Perhaps I'm close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, in the interest of time, I see this as a compromise bill. I will support it, but I believe that waiting until 2006 is too long. I think we need to send a message to our economy right now that Oregon is willing to keep businesses, they're willing to work with them, and try to meet their needs. Our corporate taxes were at $700 million, the collections, and they're down to $450 million. That is a huge drop. I believe it's about a 40% drop. So our businesses are hurting, and I think we should have sent a stronger message with this bill. We're simply not going to get revenues off people that aren't here. They vote with their feet, and businesses are saying to me, if I could get my business out of Oregon right now, I would do it. And the people who are saying that are the ones who are tied here because they're tied to the land. This is where their resources are, whether it's timber or other resources. But other businesses are considering leaving or not being here at all because of the capital gains. As we know, Washington doesn't have one. So, you can calculate the revenue you're going to lose with this, but I would say to you that the revenue that you have right now, you may lose that as well. Retired people can very easily move, and they also pay capital gains, as we heard testimony. And if the stock market improves, they're going to look at protecting their investments because many of them are on fixed income. And they pay capital gains, so they may very easily up and leave the state. So I think it's a very dangerous situation, and I don't think this bill goes far enough, but I will support it. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very short, very, very simply. Since the vote that was taken in this body last week, I've been hearing from numerous businesses in my district and elsewhere that say, number one, are you nuts? Number two, and if you're not nuts, then you better be doing something about capital gains. And the good news is this is a start, a step, and as Representative Close has indicated, 2006 is down the road, but at least it's something that they can look to. I regret that it's not sooner, but better later than never.
Any further? Well, I too look at this as a positive step for the state of Oregon. I see this as a positive step for business. I see it as a positive step for jobs, and that's what we're, continuing to try to do. I think by passing something like this would still be a good message to business, not only Oregon business, but those who are considering moving to Oregon, that at least we are looking to the future, looking to try to resolve a pretty repressive tax system for Oregon's business. And as to those who want to look at the bigger picture of tax reform as an excuse to not vote for this, I guess I would have made the same comment on the tax increase that was voted on last week, that people that didn't have a problem with tax issues at that point weren't looking at tax reform at that basis. They were just looking for ways to increase revenue, and I would submit that this is a way to increase revenue. So with that, let's call the roll.
Representative Backer.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
No.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative Monsanders.
No.
Representative Burgess.
Aye.
Chair Boyle.
Chair votes aye, and dash twos are adopted for House Bill 2502. The floor is.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2502 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Flores moves House Bill 2502 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Okay. Call the roll.
Representative Kaplan.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
No.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Flores.
Aye.
Representative
Moms
Anderson?
No.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Chair
Gore. Chair votes aye. And Carrier? I'll carry it. And House Bill 2502 moves it forward. The due pass recommendation. Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to give notice of a possible minority report.
Okay. So noted. And that closes the work session on House Bill 2502. And that leaves us, colleagues, with a work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 9. And we'll open up a work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 9. Colleagues, this is a memoriam of Chuck Fredrickson, and those of you who had visited the Senate over the past few years would come to know Chuck Fredrickson very well. He was on staff as an aide to Senator Gene Derpler, and then during this current session, he was an aide to Jackie Winters over on the Senate side as well. And he just passed away on July 14, 2003, at the age of 76. Man who really knew public service, especially for the state of Oregon, serving the state for about 50 years, first with the State Highway Department, then with the Department of Transportation, and finally with the Legislative Assembly. You'll notice in the preamble to the resolution before you that this is a man who was very involved in his community, very involved for his state, and a very good husband and father. And to that, we then resolved to mourn the passing of Chuck Fredrickson, who will be remembered for his honesty, work ethic, and compassion. And no one here to testify on this? Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, it's too bad that we don't have someone here to testify in favor of the Senate concurrent Resolution 9, but I do believe that you have summarized quite well Chuck's life, and we have before us the written word, and so I think this is the right thing to do, and I think that Chuck Fredrickson is very well deserving.
Okay. And just a note too, for the record, Senator Winters was here at the beginning of our hearing, but had to move on to other business of the Senate, and sorry that we couldn't accommodate her schedule to testify before us. All right.
Mr. Chair, I would like to comment. I have worked for many years in volunteer capacities with Frances Fredrickson, Chuck's wife, and I got to know him a little bit and his enthusiasm for all things military, and very much an advocate of military memorabilia, and it was very responsible for a lot of what you see out in our lobby area from time to time. So I'm excited about this and hope that we unanimously support this concurrent resolution.
Thank you. And would you like to move it, please?
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate concurrent resolution 9 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
So Flores moves Senate concurrent resolution 9 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Backlund.
Aye.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Close.
Aye.
Representative Forrest.
Aye.
Representative Juana Sanders.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Chair Doyle.
Chair votes aye, and Representative Backlund will carry this resolution. And that closes the work session on SCR 9. And colleagues, knowing that there has been additional business of the Senate this afternoon, and still that we'll be heading to the floor here ourselves, we can return to one that we did not move out, and we can do that now. Senate Bill 915. So let's reopen the work session on Senate Bill 915. There were some issues, colleagues, that came up on the Dash 2 amendments that Representative Przanski had offered, and those amendments were not going to move on this. So all we are considering were the Dash A9s that were already adopted. All we can do there then is move Senate Bill 915 to the floor as amended.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 915 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Forrest moves Senate Bill 915 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sanderson.
Thank you. Tell me which amendments.
This is Representative Dalto's dash A9 amendment.
A9.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay.
The one that moves the buffer.
Yes. I know. Thank you.
Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I really am concerned about the buffer. I don't know whether it's good or bad, but I would like to talk with some people between now and the floor, so I'll vote no in committee, but doesn't really mean a lot other than I need more information.
Okay.
I will second that.
Okay.
I'm in the same boat.
Okay. Further discussion?
I think I indicated earlier that I'm kind of in the third person in that same boat, and I hope it doesn't sink. In any case, I'm kind of there, I think.
Okay, and I recall you were a courtesy vote yes to get this. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chair, I was a courtesy vote as well.
All right. Let's call the roll, please.
Representative Backlund.
Aye.
No.
Representative
Forrest? Aye.
Representative
Monty
Sanders?
No.
Representative Berger?
No.
Chair votes
aye, and Representative Dalto carry this bill. And that closes the work session on Senate Bill 915. And waiting colleagues until until we get some additional news on we will just be in recess for the evening.
Okay.
open up the House Committee on Rules and Public Affairs. Nothing further before the committee. We are adjourned.